Man, it takes so long to copy shit to a 2 terabyte drive. Thing's been going for, I don't know how many hours. Let's see, what time is it? It's 22. Probably 7 hours, and it's only 71 gigabytes in. So I got 10 times.
Oh, you're recording. I didn't even know you were
recording. I am recording. That's okay.
I'm looking for, there was an article that I read that it was like something like 7 hard truths about craft beer. And one of them was the white people thing.
Okay.
And it made some good points. Some points that were debatable and some points that were very good.
Okay. Let's see if we can find that. I'm going to pause while you look it up. Okay, we're going.
Okay. So there was this article on firstwefeast.com. 15 things craft beer fans think. And then parentheses, parenthetical, but nobody says. It's there. Hard truths about craft beer, and some are very valid and some not quite so, or at least not quite as big a deal as they're trying to make out.
Your favorite local beer might be contract brewed 3 states away.
Yeah, local in quotes. This is true. There are beers that are local, have a local business, but they contract brew another brewery. I don't see how that's a big a deal. That's that big a deal. What does it matter whether the brewery is in the state as long as the business is in the state?
Yes, I mostly agree, right? Because the money is still staying relatively local, mm-hmm. right? It's different than buying something like Guinness from Diego, right? Yeah. It's the jobs, the brewery jobs aren't local. Right, so right. I mean that's their side maybe.
Well, here's the line in the article where I think gets their main point. They say craft brewing is portrayed as more homespun with recognizable faces behind the brew kettle. Mega brewing evokes images of glazed eyed automatons pushing buttons on massive gleaming machines. When you eliminate craft brewing's folksy hands on image, consumers get angry, even if the beer still tastes terrific. I don't know whether that's necessarily true. That I don't think that. That image is as important to craft beer as it is to, the large companies. But I can't deny that it plays a part. That's these are, like they say, hard truths.
Yeah.
It's not something it's not something that factors into this particular thing. It's not something that I think is a detriment to the industry. On the other hand, I think it is true that craft beer tends to try to present itself.
I think that there's a small slice, the people that want to buy a local beer.
Yeah.
Right? Because, people who want to buy local are going to buy in Pittsburgh, they're going to buy Church Brewing, they're going to buy East End Brewing, they're going to buy a Full Pint. They're not going to buy something that I can't think of a good example that, in other parts of the region, I can think of places that brew upstate or something mm-hmm. like that, right? But in this area, I can't think of one so much. But they use Brooklyn as an example, right? Because Brooklyn contracts a lot of stuff to FX Matt, right? Mm-hmm. up in upstate New York. Yes, but they're not like, oh, go make whatever the fuck you want and we're gonna sell it as Brooklyn beer. They're making Brooklyn beer the Brooklyn beer way. But the people in Brooklyn, when they're buying local, the people who seriously are trying to buy local uh-huh. and eat local and going to the farmer's market, I'm sure a lot of them are buying local breweries and not thinking, oh, Brooklyn Lager is right. local.
Plus, I mean, there's they put out, they talk about how craft brewing trade is more homespun with recognizable faces behind the brew kettle, but mega brewing evokes, but whatever. The fact of the matter is, since craft beer has become a larger enterprise, it's got to be made with larger equipment and in a more industrial way. That's just the nature of the beast.
And you have large breweries upstate that have capacity.
And if you don't recognize that, you're lying to yourself at a certain mm-hmm, level.
Sure.
So I don't see how that's a major problem.
Truth number two. Beer geeks spend all their time hunting white whales instead of drinking beer in their backyards.
This kind of goes against their first thing, because if they're complaining about how local beer is...
They're talking about the beer geeks.
Yeah.
Now.
There's a truth to this, and we've talked about this before. A lot of beer geeks, a lot of the beer, you know, the true beer hunters look for rare, and rare gets points where it doesn't necessarily deserve it sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, but there's also really good beers that are hard to get.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the sours from Russian River, Dark Lord can be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, St. Bernardus 12, or I'm sorry, not St. Bernardus.
West Veletern
12. You know, it can be amazing.
Yeah.
It's, I get conflicted on the white whale thing. I agree that some beer geeks spend too much time looking for, you know, the people that can taste the rare.
Yeah.
You know,
but they generally are singularly fantastic beers in their own right, and so they're worth seeking out if you are a beer geek, if that's what you're into.
You know, the whole thing about, I mean, a big part of craft beer is people are looking for new experiences.
Yes,
you know, oftentimes I will order a beer that I've never had over one that I've had before.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to a small degree, this whole white whale thing, you know? And if you're bitching about this, if you're bitching that you don't have loyal customers, you're in the wrong industry.
Yeah.
If you want someone who's going to drink you night, day, every day of the week, drink you, you know, only buy your brand, you know, you're in the wrong industry. This is people that are seeking out variety.
Agreed.
Now, you can take that to an extreme and only drink white whales, but that's a smaller group of people.
And if you can afford to do that, then yeah. More power to you. Number three, craft breweries are starting to use competitive big beer tactics. I don't see a problem with that. I just don't. I think that it's the nature of the beast. You get larger, you have to start doing things that are, you know, slightly more big beer related.
I mean, it depends, right? If you want to take your brand, at that point you're talking about brand, right?
Yeah.
You're making a brand that people like, that tastes good, and it's not... You're not brainwashed that, you know, you're drinking this beer because all your friends drink this beer. You know, there's still, you have to take it to that next level. You have to get away from the people who just love your product and get more people to try your product. You have to buy taps or whatever the competitive tactics they're talking about is.
Well, yeah, they're talking about buying. So there is, yeah, I mean, buying shelf space and pushing people off taps, and that's, you don't like to see that, and they're asking, could the era of collaboration, not litigation, which was, remember, was the who made that beer?
Was Avery and Russian River.
Avery and Russian River, because they came up with the same name for a beer, and so they decided then to do a collaboration.
I think it was Redemption for both.
Yeah, but they said, could the area of collaboration, not litigation, be over? No, it's just that some breweries are...
There's still plenty of... Yeah. The pie is still growing. Yeah. There's still plenty of room to take your slice. But to get to a particular level, if that's in your business plan, you're going to have to do some of these things, because you're not going to... I'm a fan of grassroots breweries. I'm a fan of people that grow their drinker base mm-hmm. organically and don't try to take shortcuts. That's not everyone's business plan. And I'm not going to fault sometimes I'll call them beer marketing companies, things like that. If they make a good product.
Yeah, that's the key. If the product is good.
They make a good product. I'm not going to fault their marketing and their tactics so much. Would I prefer not to see it? Sure. And I think, you know, this article is, hey, it's happening. It's not all about, you know, love and be loved and all that stuff. But there's still a lot of love and be loved in there. I mean, you look at, look in this market, you know, there's so much collaboration going on and whatnot.
There really is. And I think that this article, and we'll continue to go on, but I think it's pointing out truths, some of which are more important than others. This is, this one is not as big a deal, especially right now. It may become a bigger deal later.
All right, so the next one. The Brewers Association definition of craft beer is arbitrary and inaccurate.
I could not agree more.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I take the stand, the Lou Bryson philosophy. It's about the beer in the glass. Mm-hmm. You know, we like beers from, well, beers that Anheuser-Busch used to make. But the Brewers Association exists to keep the taxes low for small brewers.
Right.
That's what they exist for. They have to do things. They have to keep their numbers compelling and appealing.
Yeah.
And if Sam Adams, Boston Beer, grows up and leaves the Brewers Association, they're going to lose
a huge chunk
of craft beer will shrink by a ridiculous amount if Sam Adams becomes no longer a craft beer. Does Sam Adams deserve the small brewers tax break? I don't know. I'm not going to, I really don't know what that answer is, because deserve is such a hard thing.
Sam Adams has done an enormous amount for the craft brew industry and continues to put out stuff at a level that a lot of other companies reaching their level would not.
Yeah, I like a lot of their beers. Yeah. Do they deserve the tax break? The way I would figure out that is I would want to see the numbers about jobs lost or jobs not created by paying the higher excise taxes, things like that. And then we can figure out whether it's good.
I would want to see, not necessarily jobs, but would that affect how many beers they're putting out and things that they're trying to do and things that they're, pushing.
Well, that's a good way to look at it too. If they're going to, pull back on what they're doing because they have to pay more taxes per barrel. And it's a non-trivial amount.
Yeah.
Right now they're paying the higher... Well, they're doing it right now. They're paying the higher excise tax because while they're still a craft brewer, the excise tax law is still at 2 million barrels. So they're paying the $18 a barrel as opposed to the $3 a barrel or something like... $7 a barrel, something like that. They're still putting out a lot of beers and they're paying the higher taxes. What could they do if they weren't paying the higher taxes? But the Brewers Association job is to get all their members the best deal possible, right? That's the whole lot. I mean, don't hate the Brewers Association. Hate lobbying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
the nature of the beast. In order to get, like you said, in order to get their numbers, they have to play with the number. I mean, we did a whole thing about this some two Savers ago, and I, did a lot of interviews about with this as a main topic.
Right.
So
I if the beer is good, I really don't care. I like Hoo Garden.
Yeah.
It's good.
We've constantly rated it number one. We like at least twice we've done it, and it's coming number one of whip beers.
Even if we don't want it to be, it still comes in number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Hoo Garden's good beer. We call ourselves Craft Beer Radio. Good Beer Radio doesn't have the same ring, and there was a good beer show already.
Yeah.
So we couldn't do that. But, I mean, that's what it's about. Is the beer good? Who cares who makes it? But we're not about helping business thrive other than promoting the whole sector. We're not about reducing taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Brewers Association does what the Brewers Association does. But don't forget, they're not Craft Beer Radio. They're not here to share their love, to only share their love of a good beverage. They're here to help the trade. They're a trade association, so.
Okay, number five is one that I'm not sure whether I agree or disagree with.
Most beer festivals are merely an excuse to get drunk.
Well, first of all, you don't need an excuse. If you want to get drunk, they will.
And they're really not a cost-effective way to get drunk.
Yes.
They're expensive.
Yeah. So maybe that's where the excuse comes in, is that you say, well, I'm at a beer festival, so I'm letting myself get drunk.
maybe there's a little bit of the flocking, you know, the like, hey, everyone's drinking, so yeah, it's more acceptable for me to get drunk here.
I mean, there's something to it. You definitely get more drunk than usual at a beer festival. Unless you have incredible self-control, you find yourself, like you said, flocking. You find yourself joining in on the revelry of the situation.
Well, there's a little bit of that. There's the collector thing where you're like, I got to try all these beers. I can't get them regularly. I need to just taste these beers. I've never tasted these beers. So for me, it's more of that. It's more of pacing yourself, not overindulging, but it's not an excuse to get drunk. It's a side effect of wanting to try all the beers that are at your fingertips. There are people. Anyone who has pretzels around their neck is there to get drunk.
And the liquids they're drinking are, by and large, nothing special. At most fest, distributors roll out breweries' flagship brands. This means plenty of Stone IPA, Oscar Blues Dale's Pale Ale, Brooklyn Brewery Lager, and other delicious, if commonplace, beers served by volunteers who don't know two bits about the brands. That's my biggest problem with beer festivals right there, is that when it's volunteers, when it's not people who are there. That's one of the reasons why I love Savor so much, is because that... They're saying
here in the article, with the prices topping $70, $80, or $100 for a four-hour session, that is encouraging people to get their money's worth and get drunk.
If you're paying that much, though, I would expect to have brewery representatives there.
Yes, but they're saying paying that much is an excuse, is to justification to get drunk. And I
disagree with that.
I think it keeps the drunks out, if anything.
Yeah.
Because they can buy two cases of something, you know, they could buy four cases of Mickey's and get drunk. Yeah, right. But having volunteers, even if they're beer geek volunteers that can recite the specs of the beer, it just really rubs you in the
wrong way.
And
a beer festival should be about the beer and getting to know the brewer, especially, you know, it, for the whole craft thing.
Beer rating sites create a dangerous herd mentality. I'm not sure this is an unspoken truth. I don't know any brewer who really likes the herds on the beer rating sites.
We've talked about this for a long time. We've always said that we dismiss the rankings on these sites for the most part, because they can give you an idea of whether a beer is good or not, but they can't give an idea of how a beer ranks in comparison to another beer. The problem with the top 100 lists is that invariably you see, you know, 11-13% alcohol beers on there and rare beers.
Well, that's it. I was going to say it's the whole tasting the rare thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there's something about getting a rare beer that's really good and savoring it. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. Doing it all the time, maybe you have a little bit of an issue, but trying to check off the top 100 on Beer Advocate rate beer, especially with so many of them being, you know, limited at the brewery only on a special day, you know, it's like, come on, you know, that almost needs to be like a whole separate site or a whole separate list.
Yeah.
And then there's like, where's all the good beer that you can get on a regular basis?
And trust us, we tasted plenty of beer, plenty of the stuff that's on the top 250 or whatever list, and plenty of stuff that's not. And there's stuff that's just as good that's not.
Craft brewers are copycats. Now, what does this mean? They're saying the last 3 decades have seen craft brewers travel to the different fringes of fermentation, dosing IPAs with double and even triple the standard amount of hops, inoculating ales with funky and wild yeast, aging stouts in bourbon barrels, and reviving forgotten styles such as Germany's tangy Berliner Weiss.
All this is saying is that there are trends. This is a silly, silly, silly thing. This one. There are trends. We talked about it in the interviews you've maybe listened to. We talked about how they're trends. You know, there was hoppy, and then there's stouts, and then there's sour and French. There's, you know, they're exploring the narrative of beer, and they're finding different things, and there are just trends in the industry.
There are trends in the industry, but there's also tons of people breaking new ground.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, well, I'm gonna just have to go back to Peter Bucher from New Belgium, right? You know, you don't set out to make a new style. You make an interesting... There's not good styles. There's good beers, right? And you make a good beer, and people more people start making good beer, and then it becomes a style, and then it's judged, you know.
Yeah, and what happens?
What's wrong with that? And
what happens in an industry that likes to get together as much as this? Someone tastes a great beer and they want to make something similar, and they want to try to make it on their own. And if they like it, then they'll put it out there. And so it's not about copycat. It's about
Even if it wasn't,
it's about enjoying something and wanting to have your own take.
It doesn't really displace the product being copied. It's not like patent infringement. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure if people could make Black Tuesday, there'd be 100 breweries in the country making Black Tuesday. There's no beers that are like Black Wednesday, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, I mean, there's no beers that are like Edmund Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Everyone makes a porter, but not everyone makes the same porter. So this is dumb. And they say it at the bottom, don't act surprised when you see session IPAs in every tap list this spring and summer. I won't be surprised. I'll be happy. I'll just be happy. Mm-hmm. So that's a dumb one.
Next one's even dumber. Beer style categories, particularly IPA, mean almost nothing in today's craft beer market.
Good. Good. Why is that a problem? They say when you order a Pinot Noir or a Chablis, you have a vague sense of what you're getting. Yeah, the same thing happens with IPA. You have a vague sense of what you're getting with an IPA, but you don't know exactly what it's going to be like. So this is a really dumb point.
Why does it matter? We'll leave a question for a man more eloquent than us. I guess Garrett Oliver has an opinion on this.
Well, I share Garrett Oliver's kind of disdain for the Rhein-Heinz-Gebot. I think it's way too limiting, and I don't like the idea of. I mean, I've enjoyed Rhein-Heinz-Gebot brews time and time again, but I want. You know, I think things should be open to experimentation. It's a great thing that things are open to experimentation. So I don't know if they're trying to say this is a problem or not, but it's a dumb point.
Very. Next one. I think we're really petering out here. He needed to get 15. And New York Times needs to hire a beer critic like 5 years ago.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Number 10. By and large, brewers are all white. This is getting to the issue I was talking about. But the problem is not just brewers. The problem is craft beer industry is...
Well, you could also say by and large they're all men, right? But you interviewed, you know...
No. What I'm seeing and what I've talked about is that there are more and more women coming into the industry. Mm-hmm. And, well, either on the drinker side or on the production side.
There are... more women brewers than you may casually think, right? But still, percentage-wise, you know, it's a male-dominated thing. It's a white male-dominated thing. Okay, I mean...
It's a decent point, and it's something that should be highlighted more. Because it's something that in order... The industry can't keep growing just... feeding off of white people. Eventually that tap will be tapped. So the more that you can expand the cultural reach of craft beer, the better.
I'm just trying to yes, I agree. I don't know
how to solve the problem.
But is it a problem? And yes. by problem, I mean, is craft beer seen as whites only? Is it seen as the country club? No, I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
So it's more of a supply side problem, right? Or demand side problem, I guess.
Yeah, right? The question is how do you...
And that's not as big of a problem, where if craft beer felt like Augusta National, you know, that's a problem, right?
On the other hand, I'm sure that, you know, craft beer is on, I haven't checked, but, you know, the stuff whitepeoplelike.com or whatever. those blogs, those Tumblr blogs and stuff. I'm sure craft beer is on that. I'm sure it's noticed. Mm-hmm. It's a noticeable thing. And I think that the more the
is the stuff white people like too. I mean,
yeah. This is where the Brewers Association, you know, can really come in handy more than just lobbying for, for the industry. They can also try to do things to expand the reach of culturally. Yeah,
this guy really ran out of steam. Next one is craft beer. Craft beer drinkers are all lushes.
Yeah, that's...
How do you make that argument? I mean, you're paying more money for a beer.
And frankly, I mean, it's just not true. They just, a couple points ago, said you're going to see session IPAs on menus a lot more. Well, if people were all lushes, why would they be drinking session IPAs? So... He's contradicting himself right away. This is a really dumb point. On the other hand, there is a truth that, especially when you're new in the industry, you tend to kind of jump towards higher alcohol beers because you think that's where all the flavor is. I think there's a tendency for people who have not tried small beers, who have not really gone into session beers, to think, oh, a 3% or a 4%, that's not going to have any flavor. When that's not necessarily true. I mean, remember mm-hmm. that little Prince that we had was mm-hmm. amazing. And that was right. 3%. The kombucha. Mm-hmm. Amazing thing. Not quite a beer, but 1%. Great, great drink. So, all right. The Great American Beer Festival is no longer American. It's Western. I don't... know that this is true. We'd have to go there and find out for ourselves.
I think it's just there's a half-life, right, to how far you want to go to exhibit your beer, right? You know, the further away, there's going to be a lower percentage of people willing to do that. And that's kind of what he says, is that, you know, he's basically saying geography matters for a competition.
Yeah, you got to spend money to go there, put your and now that you're putting your IPA against 500 other IPAs as opposed to 100 other IPAs or 50 other IPAs, there's less incentive for you to it's less incentivized for brewers to
I just see that I need another point, because yes, geography matters when you're exhibiting your beers. It costs more for someone from Florida to go to Denver than someone from Colorado Springs to go to Denver.
Yeah.
Duh.
So his point is the name is bad? Well, that's the name that was been there
open.
For a long time.
It's open to American brewers only.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
The American craft brew community is too arrogant about its place in the world beer scene.
I think it's rightfully arrogant. I think that there is a huge craft beer renaissance going on in America right now. And America has a right to be pleased with that. The American craft beer industry has a right to be pleased with that.
It led the global craft beer movement. You know, I mean, sure, they were still making flavorful beers in Europe, but craft beer is not necessarily about making traditional craft beer or traditional flavorful beers. And yes, New Zealand makes wonderful beers. Denmark makes wonderful beers. You know,
Australia, Japan. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But wonderful it's beers still America. America has led and is still leading that rush.
Yes. It may not be the case in 20 years. I mean, I hope it is. But right now, I think the American craft beer...
We have definitely advantage of population over a lot of countries.
So American craft beer has a lot to be proud of right now. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily being arrogant. But if it is being arrogant, then they're being arrogant with just cause. Move on to the next one. 14. The fear of declining beer quality is still clear and present.
The free market will sort that out.
One hopes.
There are... He's going very alarmist.
That's the point of the article. I mean,
yeah. It makes it sound like every beer is going to decline. There are a lot of new breweries opening. And guess what? It's capitalism. A lot of those breweries are going to close.
Yeah.
A lot of the breweries opening in the Pittsburgh area. It boggles my mind how many breweries are in planning or about to open. And yes, a certain percentage of those are going to close. Maybe half. Who knows?
And sometimes a good brewery will fall under that too. That's going to happen. And sometimes a brewery that is not quite as good will, just because of volume or because of name, get ahead. But I think we haven't reached a point. Okay, the fear is still clear and present, but that it hasn't actually substantiated itself. In fact, all we've noticed is that beer keeps getting better, not worse.
He's talking about the crash in the 90s.
Right.
There's such more mass behind this one.
Yeah.
That a few shoddy breweries aren't going to make the whole thing
tumble. The 90s thing was a much different sort of...
It was all investors.
It was all investors. It was sort of a... It was a real bubble.
And yes, there are investors now, but not a critical mass of investors that will say, let's make this cheaper and still, you know, it's not going to cause the whole bubble to pop.
So keep fearing. All right.
A lot of brewers make way too many different beers.
It's just stupid.
Well, okay. So have a plan. Have a business plan.
Yeah.
Have an annual plan and make beers to support your plan.
Mm-hmm.
How can that be way too many if it's to your plan? Yeah. Now, if you're not running a business and you're just making 50 different beers because you want to be the brewery that makes 50 different beers, again, a lot of those breweries are going to close.
Yeah.
But if you're on your plan and you're making a lot of beers, how is that too many?
Yes, dumb. So, okay, that's the end of the article. So, a few...
I think they're like saying here, like, Anchor Steam, Orville, London Pride, like, they all make one or two. And that's, like, they make that sound like that's a positive. Maybe because it's time-tested. Different world.
Yeah. I can't be happier than that. What was the place where the world record thing was at? Huffs. They had a wall of, you know, 30, 40, 50 taps. Some of them, you know, the same brewery for five or six different taps, but completely different beers.
Imagine if Flying Dog, talking about Huffs and things, if Flying Dog only made Raging Bitch.
Yeah.
You know, Raging Bitch is a wonderful beer. It's a top seller. But imagine if they only made Raging Bitch. How often would you drink Raging Bitch? On occasion.
Yeah.
But you would drink less Flying Dog overall.
Absolutely.
And that's his argument. I mean, it looks like that's the crux of his argument. It's like, you know, these breweries have been around for centuries making one beer. Well different world.
I want to say it's his. There are three guys who wrote this. Okay. So this could be brought up. So, yeah, there's a lot to disagree with here. There's some stuff, especially in the beginning, that were true. Some of it's a little ridiculous, more than a little ridiculous. On the other hand, it's good for some introspection now and then, just to take a look at yourself and see if your course is right. So I don't object to an article like this. I just think there are some points that should be taken more seriously than others. And with that, Amazon Anonymous.
You see what the top one is? Wow.
Hold on a minute.
Some people don't listen to our show.
Oops.
I'm going to pause while we review the list. Okay, we're rolling again. Go for it.
All right, two things I wanted to bring up. The first is our second Kindle Fire purchased. Using this, this is awesome. I think that the Kindle Fire is a pretty cool machine, and it gets us a nice little stipend if you like. It's worth a lot. So cool. Thank you, whoever used us to buy your Kindle Fire. Much appreciated. But the one I wanted to get into was the book.
On Heaven and Earth, Pope Francis on Faith, Family, and the Church of the 21st Century.
Now, I'm guessing that this was most likely a gift. Simply because if you listen to our pre and post show, you probably tend to agree with us.
If they listen to pre and post show, right? But I mean, we have, like, remember Steve, he was a religious, and actually a religious gay listener, which was, it just seems really, but I'm not judging, and I haven't heard from Steve in a while,
religion is a powerful thing.
Yeah, but I mean, so we do have people who like craft beer and religion. It's funny for, someone who, talk about what we talk about in the pre and post shows, especially post shows, book about
This could be somebody who listens to our show, does not listen to our pre and post show, but mm-hmm. is buying stuff
right.
And to support us anyway. So, I have hopes for Pope Francis as a leader of a large institution like the Catholic Church will be a better Pope than, say, Ratzenberger was. But until they get up the whole thing with abusing children and hiding the priests and they kind of do their part, me and the Catholic Church are not going to be on good terms.
You used to be tight though, right?
Oh yeah. Like this.
All right.
Your pick.
Everything else is stuff you bought except for like one thing, right?
Yeah. Well, there are four or five things.
I want to talk about something you bought.
Okay.
Final Fantasy VI.
Four.
Four. Four. I can't read Roman numerals, apparently. Yeah. So, I have never played Final Fantasy. Tell me about this. Oh, it's a DS game.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's...
this is a game that was originally released for the Super Nintendo. It was called Final Fantasy II then. It was one of my favorite old games. And this is sort of a whole remastered edition of the game with totally new graphics.
Okay.
They totally revised the script. So it's basically a whole big redoing. They have an example of the old versus the new right there. You can take a look.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's better.
So I kind of want to experience. I have a DS I've had for, I don't know, like 5 years. And this has been out for 3 years, but I saw it and I was like, I want to play that. I want to, and it was like $20. So I said, sure, I'll buy it. What the heck?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's only a few other things. Someone bought some crutch pads.
Yeah. Hey,
Everyone breaks a leg now and again, so I guess you need some pink crutch pads.
Thanks for thinking of us when buying your crutch pads. And the K-cup drawer.
I mean, it's a thing that holds a bunch of K-cups. It's made so you can put your coffee maker on top of it. Makes sense.
Looks kind of cool, yeah.
K-cups are your thing. Coffee snob.
Jeff with his AeroPress. I was hoping you'd pick Cards Against Humanity, which I should be getting Tuesday. I want to play that. It's apparently really, really funny, like sort of a party game.
Okay. Comes in a nice anti-generic box. It's black, white on black instead of black on white. Oh, the black and white cards. I see. Rumor has it that Vladimir Putin's favorite dish is blank stuffed with blank. Oh, and then you have other cards. So, like, they... Rumor has it that Vladimir Putin's favorite dish is horse meat stuffed with bitches. Is the way the game is played in the picture here.
Yeah, I don't know how it's played, but it's one of the top sellers, and it's got huge amounts of people saying it's awesome. It's five stars from over 2,600 people reviews.
That's some good reviews. That's some really good review trolling, if not.
All the reviews say this. Just it's just an awesome game. So I really want to check it out. Amazon Anonymous.
All right. Anything else before we wrap this up?
I don't think.
You pulled out your D&D book. Anything you want to show me in that?
Oh, I mean, I can show you my. This is I take the same bag to D&D. So Nick was going to join us yesterday, but then he couldn't. And then I got tired anyway, so it worked out best. But, like, this is my character sheet and all the spells I have.
Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, yes. Second edition. So your character name is Jerome Jazzhands.
Yes.
And you are a N-good human mage, level 7.
It's a neutral good.
You are a 29-year-old male. Social class is what? Raylo?
Oh, that has to do with how respected I am. So I have a low amount of... It's reputation. Reputation is not... Because we did something good, we have a slightly raised reputation over just some schmucks that nobody knows.
You're a 5'6" black man, mm-hmm. with black hair and brown eyes. Appearance is that of Gregory Hines.
That's right. He's a dancer. Or he comes from a dancing family, but he was not short-footed.
And your reaction adjustment is a +1. You are a 19 strength, 7 dexterity, 11 or 12.
No, not 19 strength. That's 9 strength.
Oh, 9. Oh, 10. You changed to 9. I see. Constitution is 11 or 12, depending on how much you decide to erase one or the other.
I think it's 11, I think.
You have 9 wounds.
Yeah. Only 25 hit points, so...
Interesting.
You didn't read off all my scores. I mean, my intelligence and my wisdom is very high.
Oh, your intelligence is 19.
Yeah.
And your wisdom is a 17. Your charisma is only 13.
That's okay. That's, you know...
I see.
It's not Fabio charisma or anything, but it's... I can kick me out.
Jerome Jazzhands. Why Jerome Jazzhands?
I don't know. It's the name I came up with.
Because there's not enough black people in craft beer, so...
I was making a character. I just thought it'd be funny to have a character who
has... You don't have to pick a period-appropriate name?
No.
Like, I know in a lot of MUDs, right, you can't pick, like... Robot Steve, you know,
can do whatever you want. It's a game where you can make up the whole thing as you go along. So you can talk and do your talking in old timey medieval speak, or you can just talk normally. It's your game. You play it how you want to play it, and the dungeon master sort of guides you along.
Gotcha. Wrap this up.
Yeah,
'cause I gotta pee.
All right, thanks for listening.